Okay.
Nobody knows where the tape is. I don't put this together. I have to take it home to do it.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. We are on page 1026. We're on page 1026. We started the part of Pishnaya made him, but there's a lot to talk about, and we said we're going to finish it this week.
Do you mind reviewing something from last week?
Yeah. Okay. Don't worship idols, because if you worship idols, they're going to kill you.
There was something about the stairs. You were going, according to Pesukim in here, on page...
Oh, that Shlomo Melech's throne had six steps, corresponding with these six mitzvahs. Okay, that's...
I didn't see six mitzvahs.
There are six mitzvahs over here.
Starting from where?
Huh?
Starting from the blemish sacrifice or starting from Shoftim, the beginning?
Beginning of Shoftim.
So appointing officers.
One second.
The officers, the bride, the blind.
No, but here he brings down.
Because he started talking about it when we were down by number 17, so I thought it was corresponding to that.
No, I'm telling
you.
Obviously, I misunderstood.
Okay, just give me 1 second. Okay, the sixth, hello, it says like this. The first one said, lo sata mishpat, don't corrupt law. The next one said, lo sakir panim, don't recognize one person over the next. Then it says, lo tzika, don't take bribes. The fourth one, don't plant this idol-worshipping tree. The fifth one was, don't establish any single stone monument. And the sixth one was not to bring to God any blemished animal. Those were the six.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're at Pasuk 10, page 1026, Pasuk 6. Okay, the Torah is basically, this case was like this. If there was a guy you heard in your midst, if there's a person that went and bowed down to the idol, sun or the moon or any other things, and you checked it out and it's true, so it says you have to do what's called Rishon HaKiri, you really have to check into it and make sure the guy committed the crime. And then he said like this, you stone him. And then the Torah says like this, Al Pishnayim, this is where we're up to now. Al Pishnayim Eidim, based on the testimony of two witnesses, Ishlesha Eidim, or three witnesses, Yumas Ameis, the person will die. Lo Yumas Al Pi Eidachot, a person cannot die based on the testimony of one witness. Okay, so simply the Torah says, you need two or three witnesses to kill somebody. You can't kill him based on one testimony, one witness. So, right away, the question obviously is, like Rashi asked, the Gemara asked, a lot of commentaries ask, if two witnesses are good, so why do you need three? Why does the Torah say two or three witnesses? It's either two or three. If two is good, three is for sure good. So why does the Torah say based on the testimony of three, or mean, or two or three? And then the Torah also adds, Lo yumas al pi eidachot means you cannot die based on the testimony of one witness. Yeah? Which, by the way, the Gemara says like this, you can't kill based on the testimony of one witness. One witness cannot extract money based on testimony, but he can make the person swear. In other words, like this, if I say you owe me $1,000, if I have no proof, it's worthless. If I have two witnesses that testify that you owe me $1,000, so then you have to pay me $1,000. It's a given. What happens if there's only one witness that says you owe me $1,000? So the Gemara learned out from various different psukim, including this one, that the witness cannot make you pay. One witness is not enough. What the witness can do is, if the witness just testifies, you owe me $1,000, and you deny it, you swear against the witness, meaning the witness says, you owe me the money. You swear you don't. It's a biblical vow, by the way, not rabbinic. It's a biblical vow, and then you don't owe me the money. What?
If he doesn't swear?
Then you have to pay. Then you have to pay. No, it's a biblical. A biblical oath means they spooked the room and they made dark, and there was a Sefer Torah, and I mean, with the whole.
So who wants to do that?
You should know a lot of people, instead of swearing, even though they could have sworn honestly and gotten out of it, they would pay instead, just because they didn't want to swear. The Gemara says when the Ten Commandments, when Hashem said, "Don't swear falsely, don't say my name in vain," the Gemara says the world trembled. And there are a lot of people that would not, they were honest. They didn't have to pay. But there was one witness that he said, you know what? I'm not swearing. I'm just going to pay and get out of it. But one witness, by the way, there's an interesting halacha. I don't want to go that far off. What happens if I give you an example? I say, you owe me $100. Or I'll give you an example. What I come to you and you say, you stole this book of mine. You stole the book of mine. Basically means it's my book. One witness testifies and you deny it. You deny it. And one witness says, you stole the book. So what do you have to do? One witness said you stole the book.
Yeah,
okay. So you have to swear that you didn't steal the book. Right? One witness makes you swear. But you can only swear against the witness. Correct? Now, what happens if I say you stole my book, the witness says you stole the book, you took the book, but you say, yeah, I took the book, but it's mine. It's not yours. Now think a second. The witness says you took the book. Right? You say, yes, I took the book, but it's mine. I didn't steal it. It's mine, not yours. Now, what would you have to do over here?
Prove that you are not the owner.
You can't prove. There's no, that's it.
Swear.
What are you going to swear?
That this book is mine.
That's not what you have to swear. One witness causes you to swear the opposite of what the witness said.
Right.
In other words, if the witness says you took it, you have to swear you didn't take it. And then you keep the book. But in this case, the witness says you took it. What would you have to swear? I didn't take it. But you can't swear I didn't take it because you agree you took it. So you know what the din is in that case? The Gemara tells such a story happened.
He keeps the book.
No. The Gemara says, because you can't swear, you have to pay. Or another case, I say I lent you $1,000. Okay. I say, you owe me $1,000. You said, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. So this, meanwhile, you can't pay. I mean, I don't have proof you owe me $100,000. I say, you owe me $1,000. I have no proof.
And there is a witness in this.
One second. So I'll tell you what happened. So I say, you owe me $1,000. I lent you $1,000. You said, I don't remember. I don't know. And one witness says, you did. You did borrow the $1,000. Now, what would the halacha be? You would have to swear against the witness. What did the witness say? You borrowed the money, right? What would you have to swear?
No.
I didn't borrow the money. But you can't swear I didn't borrow the money because you say, I don't know. You can't swear I didn't borrow the money. You don't know. You can't lie. So that's another case. You're supposed to swear you can't. So what's the halacha? Then you have to pay. The halacha, you have to pay. But you can't kill somebody or give somebody lashes or anything like that based on the testimony of one witness. By the way, if a non-Jew transgresses his 7 mitzvahs b'nei noach, even with one witness, they get killed. But in Jewish law, the Torah says clearly here, lo yumas al-piyei shnei, al-piyei lachad. But coming back to the beginning of the pasuk, The pasuk says, based on the testimony of two witnesses or three witnesses. Okay? So the Gemara asks, if two is enough, what's three? Okay? So the Gemara says like this. There's a number of different answers to this question. Each one is very interesting within itself. One answer the Gemara gives is, if I come, let's say I bring three witnesses. A guy committed a murder or worshipped idols, yeah? And there are 20 witnesses. There are 20 witnesses. So the Gemara says what the Torah means over here is, you need to speak to all 20. Even though you spoke to two witnesses, and you already have the story. The two witnesses testified the guy worshipped idols, or killed somebody. But the Gemara says, that's why the Torah says, based on two or three. Meaning, if even though two's enough, but if there's three, hear the testimony of all of them. Because you'll still get a clearer picture of what happened. If there's 100 witnesses, you need to check out all 100.
Don't the witnesses come in pairs, or?
No, not necessarily. Well, we'll see. That the Gemara discussed. They have to see each other, not see each other, know each other, not. But bottom line is, two witnesses, even if there's more than two witnesses, you need to check out all the witnesses. That's answer number one. Answer number two, what the Torah says, two or three witnesses, teaching is us another halacha. What happens if there's 100 witnesses? And from the 100, one witness is not kosher. He's a relative. Relatives are not kosher witnesses, right? You have 100 witnesses coming, and they say, they all testify, Reuven killed Shimon, or Reuven worshipped idols. Testifying. One of the witnesses, two witnesses happen to be brothers. So one of them is no good. Right? Not kosher. The din is, and this is a very strange din, and the Gemara says it's exeris kosher, it's illogical. This is what the Torah says. If one of the 100 are no good, all 100 are no good. I have 99 kosher. The Gemara says, this is what the Torah says over here. Based on testimony of two or three, means we liken two and three together. Just like if two, one of them is not kosher, you don't have testimony. If three or more, if one of them is not kosher, they're all no good. Which explains an interesting thing. This is a very practical halacha, by the way. When you have a chasana, a chuppah, and you need two witnesses to testify on the ring giving, right? You call two witnesses to say, Areyat Mekadeshes. So if you ever notice, when they call up the witnesses, they designate the witness, the two witnesses, they designate them. And many times they'll say, to the exclusion of all others. Many times, even though Apidin, if you designate two witnesses, if you say A and B are the witnesses, why did you call up the witnesses? Why did you just have two witnesses standing there? What do you have to?
There should be no doubt that those are the two people?
No, the reason is very simple. Under the chuppah, you have a father who's a relative, you have brothers who are relatives, mm-hmm. You have mothers who are not kosher witnesses, nothing personal. You have all these non-kosher witnesses under the chuppah. Now, if the father, at the time of the ring giving, has in mind to testify, so because he's not kosher, none of the witnesses are kosher. So by designating the witnesses, especially if you say to the exclusion of all others, what you're saying is, only these two can testify. Nobody's testifying.
How come not everybody says that?
Everybody designates the witnesses.
No, everybody says to exclusion of, though?
I told you, Alpidin, you don't have to say that, because by designating Reuven and Shimon as witnesses, you're automatically saying only these two you want as witnesses. Like the Gemara gives an example. The Gemara says, the witnesses had to see the new moon. Yeah? What happens, a father and a son are walking in the street, and they see the moon. So what do? So the Gemara says, one of them goes to Beis Din to testify, and the other one doesn't. Because if they would both go together as witnesses, even though you can have another 100 people coming to testify, is going to disqualify the whole thing.
Does it matter if it's the father or the son?
No, it doesn't. No, whoever. So this is what the Gemara learns out from this pasuk: Al pi shnayim edim, or al pi shleish edim. Why does the pasuk say two or three? If two is good, so three is definitely good, because it teaches us just say by two. If one's not kosher, so then you don't have testimony because you only have one witness left. So even by three or more, even if one witness is not kosher, it's not kosher. The whole thing's not good. Okay, that's the second answer to the Gemara. Another answer the Mefarshim explained is another interesting answer. We learned in the Gemara, there's a din that's called Edim Zeimimin. Okay, let me just explain this a little bit. Two witnesses say A killed B. Two witnesses say A killed B. Another two witnesses say, no, C killed B. Okay? Two witnesses testify A killed B. Two witnesses say, no, C killed B. So what do you do? It's two against two. They cancel each other out. There's no testimony. That's it. They canceled each other out. So that's it. There's no witnesses. Yeah? By the way, I just want to say, in the halacha, like, what happens if two witnesses say A killed B, and 100 witnesses say C killed B?
Still equal.
Equal. Two and a, this is what also this pasuk teaches us. 2 and 100 are equal. Once you have two, you can have 1,000, 100,000, it doesn't matter. Two and anything above two is equal. Which also doesn't make sense, because think about it, 100 should be better than 2. But this is what's called Gzeres HaKosev. It's illogical, the Torah says, this is the way it goes. 2 is like 100. So it teaches us, 2 are like 100. It teaches us that if any of them are not kosher, it's no good. Right? It teaches us that you have to check out the witnesses, all of them, even though 2 is enough. You need to check out all the witnesses and to get it straight. And there's another din. So HaKosha, that we just said, if two witnesses say A killed B, and two other witnesses say, no, C killed B, what happens? They cancel each other out. There's no testimony. Correct? Now, what happens if two witnesses come, and they say that on Sunday morning, we learned this in the Gemara here, Sunday morning in L.A., Reuven killed Shimon. Okay, two witnesses testify, Sunday morning, 10 o'clock in L.A., Reuven killed Shimon. Another two witnesses come and say, listen, we don't know if Reuven killed Shimon or not, but how could you two witnesses testify that Reuven killed Shimon Sunday morning in L.A.? You were with us Sunday morning, 10 o'clock in Hawaii. Okay? That's called Edim Zeimimin. In other words, when two witnesses testify A killed B, and the other one says, no, C killed B, they're contradicting the story. Then they cancel each other out. But what happens, they say, we don't know who killed Shimon. We don't know that Reuven killed Shimon. But how could you two witnesses testify that you saw Reuven kill Shimon Sunday morning in L.A. at 10 o'clock. You were with us in Hawaii at Sunday at 10 o'clock. So then what's the din? You do to those witnesses what they wanted to do to the guy they testified against. They said Reuven killed Shimon, so they want to get Reuven killed, death sentence. So you kill the witnesses. Okay? Now,
kill the witnesses?
Kill the witnesses.
First group.
And Thursday, you always believe the last group. If another group came and said, how can you say they were in Hawaii at 10 o'clock? You guys were with us in China at 10 o'clock. So you believe the last group always. That's again, illogical. Now, what happens though, if they only did Zeimimim to one of the two witnesses? That means two witnesses testify, Reuven killed Shimon. Right? A and B testify, Reuven killed Shimon. Two other witnesses come and say, 1 minute, B, I don't know. But A, not A and B were with us in Hawaii. They say, A, you were with us in Hawaii. So the din is the witnesses do not become Zaymimin. When do the witnesses become Adam Zaymimin? If you undo the whole, all of the witnesses. Both of them. What happens if it's five witnesses came to testify Reuven killed Shimon? And you invalidated four out of the five by saying you guys were with us in Hawaii? They do not become Adam Zaymimin. You don't do to them what they wanted to do to somebody else.
You don't accept the testimony.
1026. Either. You heard this. 1026. What?
You don't accept the testimony
no.
either.
No. But you don't, they're not Adam Zaymimin. So another answer to the Gemara is that this, it says two or three, meaning just say two, you have to disqualify both. Three, you also have to disqualify all three. Or 100 or whatever it is. Then there's a very interesting Ramban. The Ramban writes like this. He brings down the Psadia Goin, who says a very interesting statement. The Psadia Goin, and he refutes him. The Psadia Goin writes, why does it write two or three? It doesn't mean two or three witnesses. It means the two witnesses need to testify in a bezdin of three. It's a very interesting way of learning. The Psadia Goin says, two or three means not two or three witnesses. Two witnesses in front of a court of three. So the Ramban asks on him, that can't be. Because a bezin to kill, you need 23. So how do you have a bezin of three killing? It can't mean that. And therefore it has to mean witnesses. And therefore there are various different answers that we said. Okay, so that's the... What the Gemara says, Al Pishnai made Mishlei Sheidim Yakum Dover. Yumas Ameis. Yeah.
So, do I understand that they look at it as a group together, whether it's two or five, is all equal?
One group, correct.
One group. So, and one witness is not kosher.
To kill somebody.
To kill somebody. But, what doesn't make sense is that if he's just a relative, he's not like against it, or he's not lying, or he's just happened to be a relative, how does that make this whole thing not acceptable? I mean,
the Gemara says it's exeris hakosav, meaning it's completely illogical. The Gemara gives an example. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen, brothers, yeah?
Right.
Honest people. They're not going to lie. If they watched a murder happen, and they were the only two witnesses, yeah?
Right.
And they came to Bez, the Moshe and Aaron comes to the court and says, listen, we saw Dawson kill Aviram, or whatever the story is, yeah? They're not kosher.
So
she's not going to like this. In Torah law, okay, the Torah says, Va'amdu shnei anashim, witnesses can only be male. Women cannot testify. It's not because they lie. It's not because they're not intelligent. Okay? A Melech Yisrael, a Jewish king, is also not allowed to testify. There's certain guidelines that Torah gives. Again, 100 witnesses say something, yeah? 1 out of 100 are no good. Why should that disqualify other 99? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
But that, the Torah says, that's the way it is.
Could it be that that single person knew that by him testifying, he makes the whole thing known, and it comes on purpose and says that I want to testify? That means that he knows that
it's possible.
Could be, it could
it's
be
possible.
That this person is innocent. And
it's
I'm
possible.
Going to,
is God calling? one second. In fact, There's another. If you look at the end of the pasuk, I want to bring it out because it explains this point also. The Torah says, "Lo yumas al pi eid achad." Before that, the Torah says, "Al pi shnayim eidim," based on two or three, "yumas hameis," the dead person should die. What do you mean? The dead person should die. It should say yumas. You kill him. What does yumas hameis mean? It's redundant. The dead person should die.
Right.
That means he's not dead yet. Why are you calling the dead person should die? So the Arachaim answers a very interesting answer. The Arachaim says, because Bezdin can't kill the guy. Because there's only one witness, or only two witnesses can kill him. But God will take care of him a different way. He says, you can't kill him. But Mace, he's going to die anyway. He's dead. Courts, lo yumas, you can't, the courts can't kill him. But God is gonna make him die. That's one answer. And then there's another answer that the commentaries give.
The answer to the illogical, that this whole thing got nullified.
And I'll explain this in a second. Because, and the other mafashim say, why is it called a mace? They say because wicked people are called dead anyway. The question is, when the Torah uses the expression, you kill the dead one, if he's dead, you don't have to kill him. It's just a funny expression. So one commentary answers, he's dead because he's wicked, and wicked people are called dead. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, yumas hameis, because you can't kill him, but God will kill him. So he's going to die anyway. Okay, now. Looking in the entire scheme of things, yeah, somebody kills somebody, correct? Anyway, you want to look at God runs the world. Whether we agree with it or not, God runs the world. Why did God make that Reuven killed Shimon with nobody watching? Or only one witness watched? Obviously, if Reuven killed Shimon, God made it happen, right? Many times. Reuven can't move without God, and Shimon wouldn't have died if God didn't want him to. Okay? So Reuven killed Shimon, and God made it in a way that nobody saw it, or only one witness saw it. Why did God do that?
Did he have to correct something from a lifetime or something?
It's possible. It's possible. That this person that got killed, as Rashi says in Mishpatim, maybe he killed somebody else and nobody saw it. So now he had to die because there were no witnesses to kill him then. So like I said before, there are times God will kill him. God will take care of the situation. If God wanted Reuven to die for killing Shimon, God would have made somehow witnesses there.
Yes. But he still died. The man still died, though. I mean, it's not like...
That means, again,
well,
not... It doesn't mean that I should go around killing people and I say, well, God wanted you to die, that's why I killed you.
No, but what does it make a difference in his life if there were... The man who died, like, if there were witnesses or not?
There's no difference. The only difference is the one that murdered him, what do you do to him? Mm-hmm. Is he off the hook? Or is he not off the hook? That's the only difference. Now, why... Think about it. God makes that Reuven killed Shimon, and he's off the hook. Why?
Yeah, why is he off the hook?
Why?
I don't know.
Huh?
Why?
You want to be God? Don't try.
I want to know why women can't be witnesses.
They're too good to be witnesses. They are so special.
Absolutely. But that's not the reason.
I told you once when I was a bachi yet, I was a teenager, I spoke for a group of conservative kids in Long Island. Bachi used to go out to speak, right? So he spoke there. And the girls were asking me, you know, don't forget this is the later 60s or early 70s, you know, those years when... So the girls asked me, why is it that women don't do mitzvahs? And I gave this whole explanation. I said, because mitzvahs are made to connect us to God, and the fact that God feed women from the mitzvah means they don't need it because they're self-connected, and they don't need the mitzvah, and the whole, you know. So this girl, I'll never forget, this girl gets up and she says, can I ask you a question? Okay, beautiful explanation. Do you believe what you just said? I lied and I said yes. No, but this is it. The everything has its mission and goal and focus and job, whatever. Like I said, two brothers, Moshe and Aaron, can't testify. That doesn't make sense either. David Melech Yisrael was not allowed to testify. It also doesn't make sense. There's two and 100 are the same. Also doesn't make sense.
Why wasn't he allowed to?
What?
Why wasn't?
Because of his level of whatever it is, he cannot testify. No, it's like whatever it is. It's like the king is not allowed to testify. All, you should know most of the laws of testimony in Torah law don't make sense. The Gemara says is Gzeres HaKos. I'm not saying it doesn't make. The Gemara says Gzeres HaKos means there's no reason. I mean, obviously Hashem has a reason, but there's no reason why 2 in 100 is the same. Doesn't make sense. If there's 100 witnesses, one of them is no good. All 100 are no good. Doesn't make sense. You have 99 kosher ones. What? Who cares? Take away this guy and count the other 99. The whole thing, it doesn't make sense. But that's the law of testimony. And by the way, there's a very interesting, it's a big controversy, it's coming up more and more, but nobody's gonna have the guts to paskin, because anyway it's irrelevant today. The Torah says clearly, you can only die on the testimony of two witnesses. Right? How about DNA? If you can prove with DNA, what they do in secular court, right? They prove with DNA, a guy did murder or didn't murder, right? A lot of guys are getting out of prison now because the DNA proved that they didn't do it. If somebody could prove with DNA that Reuven killed Shimon, in simple halacha, it's not believed. Because the Torah says it could only be the testimony of two witnesses. DNA is not going to do it. Video cameras are not going to do it. Self-admission is not going to do it. Okay? In the same, we don't test by the Gemara, she also. In secular court, if there's a murder, yeah, and a guy comes and confesses to the police that he did it. Right? The trial's over. He admitted. In Torah law, if a guy admitted he committed a crime, Bezin says, go home, we don't believe you. If a guy comes to Bezin, Shimon is dead, okay? And Reuven comes to Bezdin and says, guys, I did it. He's not believed. Because you can't incriminate yourself in halacha. You can't testify against yourself. You're not believed. It's all illogical. But that's what the Torah says. Now, I just want to mention one more aspect of testimony of witnesses is like this. There's two types of witnesses in halacha. There's what's called, this way the Rogachover learns, this is the way the Rebbe learns, not everybody agrees with it, but this is the way we hold, obviously. For instance, if I lent you $100, okay, and I want to have witnesses, why do I want witnesses? In case you'll deny it, I'll produce the witnesses, and I'll have a proof that you owe me the money, correct? But what happens if I say I lent you the money, you agree you borrowed the money, do we need witnesses? Do we need witnesses? I lent you $100, I lent you $100, you say yes, you lent me $100, and yes, I owe you the money. Do we need witnesses? What do you need witnesses for? Right? Okay. By kedushin, by a ring, like we said before, yeah? A boy and a girl go into a room, privately, a boy gives the girl a ring, says, the whole spiel. They go out of the room. The boy says, I gave the ring. The girl says, I got the ring. It's worthless. Why? Because there are no witnesses. Now, the question is, if the witnesses are to verify it, he says it happened, she says it happened. What do you need witnesses for? Why shouldn't it be good?
Well, does that affect the community more?
Why community?
Well, when people are married versus that private deal that they made with the money?
What's the difference? So, the Rogatchev explains, that's what Rebbe learns, by the way, is that certain types of witnesses are not to verify. Certain witnesses make it happen. It's called Edi Kiyum versus Edi Birur. Edi Birur means they verify that it happened. Edi Kiyum means they make it happen. In other words, by marriage, when the Torah says you have to give a ring, the Torah says part of the process is that it's done in front of two witnesses. And therefore, even if they take a selfie of them doing the Kedushin, there's a picture. what's the question? It's not valid. You must have two witnesses. Because the witnesses don't... See, here, the witnesses verify that Reuven killed Shimon. Without them, how do you know Reuven killed Shimon? Maybe not. But by Kedushin and by Yeget, also the same thing, the two witnesses make it happen as part of the process. But the Torah says either two or three, and without it, it's no good.
And the age, Rabbi, it has to be over
21? No.
Witnesses.
It says, halachically, 13, when they're an adult. But it says in capital punishment cases, and even they try to do this by most signing of ksuba and all that, they try to have over 18. Because then you know for sure they reach puberty and for sure they're adults.
And what about if the witness has some mental problem?
No, then he's not kosher.
So they still have to qualify that?
But the Beis Din checked out the witnesses, make sure they were 100% good. You can have a brilliant 12 and a half year old. Mature, brilliant, sane, everything. That's before teenagers, that's why they could still be sane. But he's not an adult. It's not a testimony.
Also, you have to be a Shomer Shabbos to be
a you have to be, if you're a sinner, you're not a kosher witness, because the Torah says a Rasha cannot be a witness. I mean, well, there's a lot of...
So 13 they can...
But again, even by Kedushin, by a marriage in Ksuba, Rabbanim will not take under 18.
What if they call the two witnesses and one that they designated is they can't find it, he's not around?
So they designate another guy instead.
They can designate another.
Yeah, he's not here. Designate another guy. Happens a lot of times, by the way. Chuppah, you call up, they're not there. So you designate another guy.
And in a situation where there is 100 and one of those people is not qualified because mentally he's not qualified or whatever problem he has, he doesn't null the other 99.
It depends. If he came as a witness to testify, he would.
If a person has mental problem, comes as one of the 100...
It depends what mental problems. Everybody has mental problems. who's not mentally insane? The question is to what extent? No, I'm serious. If you can count him for a minion, then he could testify. Somebody who's nebuch mentally retarded cannot be counted to a minion.
But does he nullify the other 99?
It depends. If Beis Din accepted him as a witness, then very possible. Beis Din might tell him right away, you're not a witness.
But what? You said they don't count him as a minion? What?
Look, God forbid, somebody who's mentally retarded cannot be counted for a minion.
No?
No. Cheresh, Shaita V'kot. The person who's deaf-mute, mentally retarded, and a minor cannot be counted.
Do they have an aliyah?
No. You know, there's a big... I don't want to go off topic, but kids with Down syndrome or autism or things like that, it's a big shilas. What do you do when they become bar mitzvah? Mm. You know, it's really a big halachic issue what their mental stability is. Can they get an aliyah? Can they be counted for a minion? These are issues that...
Depends on the person.
Yeah, I mean, there's no clear-cut answer because it depends on the mental... stability of the person.
People are able to understand and they learn Hebrew and others aren't. I mean,
what?
Is there something to be said about, like, the idea that one person could spoil the whole group, so to speak, like just that energy that that witness gave, kind of like to the opposite, like when we say that,
you know, the famous
group of Jewish people, there's something to be said about a unit.
Okay, you know what the famous story, they give this always as a mushel to little kids. A bunch of people going on a boat. Okay, and there was a kid on the boat. He got bored. So he took out his pocket knife, and he started making a hole at the bottom of the boat. Okay? So the people said to him, you lunatic, what are you doing? You're crazy. He said, it's under my seat. I paid for my seat. I could do whatever I want. In other words, as they say in America, mind your own business. Okay? So the Rebbe said many times, mind your own business is against Torah, by the way. So obviously people are going to stop him. Now, why? It's his seat. Let him do what he wants. Because what he's doing is affecting all of them. The water's going to come in. They're all drowned.
How about in a minyan? Why is that same person counted in a minyan?
Who?
The non-kosher witness. Isn't he part of a minyan?
What do you mean a non-kosher witness? Because of what?
Let's say if there's a minyan and they're davening.
And to our relatives?
isn't a non-kosher witness okay to part of a minyan though?
Why not?
Because isn't that the same concept that it ruins it for the minyan, so to
there's
speak?
There's a unique, can you have a minyan of 10 cousins and relatives?
Obviously yes.
Okay, can they testify?
No.
Okay, it's two different worlds. I mean, one is testimony. The Torah says these are the halachas of testimony. And relatives can make a minyan. It's two different things.
But the person, let's say...
What you mean is somebody who publicly and openly desecrates Shabbos. Is that what you meant?
Or a Rasha.
A Rasha is counted for
a minyan?
He could be counted.
That's what I'm saying, though.
But a Mechal Shabbos openly desecrates, doesn't care in, you know, which doesn't exist today, Bechlau. Mm-hmm. But a person openly desecrates Shabbos has a din like a goy. Not because he's a Rosh, he has a din like a guy. Somebody who is a full-fledged, an adulteress. Yeah? He could be counted for a minion. But somebody in Mechal, there's a uniqueness of Shabbos, that a person who openly desecrates Shabbos publicly doesn't care, and he just does it blatantly, and he knows about Shabbos, and understands the sanctity, and knows all about it, and he doesn't. He has a din like a goy. So you can't count him, obviously, as a witness. And you can't count him for a minyan. But that's a unique situation, because he has a din like a goy. If he shechs your meat, it's not kosher. Mm-hmm. In fact, you should know there's a unwritten statement, so to speak. When you designate witnesses to come up, it says in Halacha, in their mind, the witnesses should do tshuva. That they shouldn't be wicked. Wow. Sometimes they joke, no, did you do tshuva yet? I mean, mm-hmm. No, because a Rashi can be a kosher witness. So when you call up witnesses, halacha says the witnesses themselves should think tshuva. And then they're not a Rashi, and then they be counted as 100% kosher witnesses. But the whole laws of witnesses doesn't make sense at all.
Rabbi,
what?
What is the concept of swear? We see throughout Chumash that Hashem swears to his name.
You mean when somebody does something to you, curse him, swear at him?
No.
In Bezdin?
When somebody swears in the name of Hashem, but the concept of someone who swears, Hashem also swears in Torah.
Yeah.
What is this concept of swear?
Get a new ring.
Concept of swearing.
The concept of swearing in halacha, I don't talk about coming to swear in Bezdin that your statement is true. That's a different point, right? That's right. The swear, okay. You know what marriage vows are? What's a marriage vow? I mean, by Yidden, there's no... Kedushin is a marriage vow. So we don't use the word vow. If two friends get into a fight, right? Or you have David and Yonathan in Tanakh, right? We read a Mocha Chodesh, they made this bris, they made this covenant between them. Correct? Or the previous Rebbe in 1927 called in nine of the Chassidim and he said, I'm making a minyan, I'm making a covenant to death, we will spread Yiddishkeit. And there was a minyan, including the previous Rebbe, with nine Chassidim, they made this covenant, to death we part, with spreading Yiddishkeit. Okay? Now, two friends, get into a fight, so they break up. They're not friends anymore. Yeah? What the purpose of a vow is, that even when logic dictates you should separate, the bond, which is the shvua that binds the people together, keeps them going anyway. That's the difference. I'll give you, in today's world it exists rampantly, okay? Can you explain to me a difference if a boy and girl are living together or they're married? What's the difference? What's the practical...
In today, there's no difference.
There's no difference. What's supposed to be the difference?
Commitment.
A boy and a girl that are living together, there's no commitment. So you don't like, goodbye, it's over. Right? The union of a marriage is that even when you get into a fight, it's not over. Why isn't it over? Because a fight is logical. And the bond is deeply rooted that even when logic says it's not going good, you make it work anyway. So the concept of an oath and a vow in this case means it strengthens the commitment that even when logic says it shouldn't happen, it happens anyway. That's why when Hashem makes that vow anyway, okay, Hashem says it's definitely going to happen. That's the concept of a vow in Torah law.
But not always is accepted.
What?
Someone who swears. If someone kills someone.
No.
They swear they, I did that.
No, that's worthless. But that's not the swearing that I said. Swearing in court is to verify something happened. Okay? But I'm talking about a person makes an oath. Like you said, God makes an oath that whatever. That the Jews are not going to go into the land of Israel. You know, the spies over there, that whole story. Or a person makes a vow for something. The purpose of making a vow is that even when logic says it shouldn't happen, you make it happen anyway. That's the purpose of a shvua, of a vow. On the first page of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe calls the Gemara, Mashbi Nesi Tzadik V'Alti Rosh. You give the Nesham before it comes into the world, you give it an oath that it should be a Tzadik and not a Rasha. Yeah? So the question, obvious, the Alter Rebbe alludes to it, but he doesn't ask it, Tzemach Tzadik asks it. The question is, listen, who is this oath given to? The Yetzer Tov wants to be good anyway. The Yetzer Hara is not helping anyway. So what's the purpose of this oath? Who do you give the oath to? Why do you give the neshama an oath? Should be a tzaddik. The neshama wants to be a tzaddik. It's the body that doesn't let it. Right? So what's the answer? So the Alter Rebbe explains, mashbien, which means oath, shvua, also comes the word like we say in benching, v'chalta v'savata. It means to fill up, to give additional power. Mashbien eise means the neshama is administered an oath, means that the neshama is given additional powers that it could be a tzaddik and not a rasha, even though the body's in the way. That's the purpose of an oath. That's the purpose of a covenant between friends like David and Yonason or whatever it is. That even if logic or marriage vows for that matter. Okay? There is still a more, even today, in today's world, yeah? If there's marriage or no marriage, the commitment is much more by marriage than it is by not marriage. It's still there. Because in today's world, is it the whole institution of marriage doesn't make sense. In today's world, everybody's into convenience. It's convenient, yeah. Not, marriage is inconvenient. What do I need it for? Why do I need the headache of marriage? I could do without it. It's not convenient. I could do what I want anyway, so what do I need? You know? That's the difference. Okay, just finish this up. Yado edim tia beberishayna lamisi. Okay, we'll just finish this pasuk. It's pasuk Zion. The hand of the witnesses should be the first ones to kill him. V'yad kolam b'achrein, and the rest of the nation kills him afterwards. Or v'yad tolam ikebechu, you get rid of the evil amidst you. Meaning like this. The Torah says, when somebody is killed, who kills him? The witnesses. The ones that testify. And that's an interesting thing, just to finish off with this. When we're going to be reading some Parshas Hazinu, God says the heaven and earth are witnesses that the Jewish people are going to keep Torah and mitzvahs. And the Torah says clearly, if the Jews sin, the heaven will not give its rain, the earth will not give its produce. Okay? And it says in the Medrash, that's what this pasuk means. The witnesses are the first to kill. The witnesses of heaven and earth that testify whether the Jews keep mitzvahs or not, they're going to be the ones that are going to judge and execute or reward for that matter. If the Jews are going to be sinning, the heaven won't produce rain, the earth won't produce fruit, and the same thing, the opposite. So the Torah says the Edom should be the first one to kill him, and everybody else, and then everybody else afterwards.
And if they didn't want?
Huh?
And if they didn't want?
No, Bezdin makes him do it. The Torah says all the witnesses have to kill him. And if they didn't, then it says everybody else afterwards. Because it means that if they couldn't, then they didn't.
But this is not happening right now, right?
No, there's no capital punishment in Halacha now.
And when Mashiach comes, are we going to meet this system or not necessarily?
There'll be a system, but there won't be capital punishment because nobody's going to be sinning. Mm-hmm. By the way, there's another interesting question in today's world. What is the Jewish opinion about the court system's capital punishment? Torah law, middle of the base, second temple already, there was no more capital punishment. The question is, what is the Jewish approach to capital punishment in the secular courts? Are we for it or against it? And there are books in contemporary halacha which goes into 30, 40 pages discussing all the pros and cons in halacha of whether we hold of capital punishment today or not. It's a very complicated issue.
They stopped it in the middle of the
second base of Mishnah, because not all Jews were living there in Eretz Yisrael.